Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
In 1993, PJ Harvey was coming up man-sized. Well, who's doing that today? Where are the women in rock today? This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. And coming up on our show, Polish jazz pianist Marcin Wasilewski will perform live in our studio. But to begin, in music, 1999 was the year of the woman. Liz Phair released her landmark debut, and seminal records were released by The Breeders, Bikini Kill, and PJ Harvey, whom you're hearing now. Collectively, these artists helped empower a generation of women. 15 years later, some of music's most visible female artists are making headlines more for their offstage antics than their records, and some are wondering where those rebel girls have gone. Joining us in the studio for a look at the state of women in rock is Elizabeth Vincentelli, Time Out New York's arts and entertainment editor. Elizabeth, welcome back to the show.
Hello.
And Carlene Bauer. She is music critic with Elle Magazine. Carlene, welcome.
Thank you.
Elizabeth, you complained earlier to one of our producers that you miss the women rockers of the 90s. What did you mean by that?
Well, just that I'm really desperately looking for women who are now taking a stage and rocking hard with a kind of stupid abandon that men don't seem to have any problem summoning. And there's something very cathartic in being in the audience at this type of show. And I'd like to see some girls, doing it on stage, too.
So the bands from 1993, you know, Bikini Kill, The Breeders, Sleater-Kinney, I mean, what were they doing that we're not seeing today? Is it just volume and abandon?
I think so. I really think it does boil down to these essential traits of the rock experience. And I go to see bands now like Black Lips or Coach Whips, bands that really like bring it on live. And I think there's really, especially now in our age of like YouTube and digital entertainment, where there's a need for the cathartic experience of the live show. And I wish it's as simple as that. I really wish there would be more women doing it.
Carlene, you've recently written about, you know, the hiatus, the sort of indefinite hiatus of the seminal band Sleater-Kinney. Do you agree with Elizabeth's assessment that that's what's missing?
I do in part because I did come up at that time. That was sort of when my music fandom was sort of at its apex. But I do feel like there are some bands that sort of serve that purpose but may not be having the sort of broadcasting the rage or the catharsis via guitar or via a very loud noise. Though I miss those things. I'm thinking like Beth Ditto of The Gossip. She has a very, you know, she's outsized, sort of literally her voice is outsized as well. And she's sort of barreling through her songs, you know, and you've got, you know, she's got a two-person band backing her up, very punk, very soulful, and that's a live experience that you probably would never forget. And I'm thinking also a personal favorite of mine is Nico Case. While she's sort of I don't even use the term alt country, but
everybody does.
Everybody does. Everybody does. It's useful. But she has also an outsized voice. And while her presence is a little more, it's not as theatrical. The songs are very chilling. The musicians she chooses are first rate. And she herself, in her stage presence, she'll show up in jeans and sort of twist her hair around in a ponytail and tell sort of dirty jokes about unicorns. So it's sort of like all mixed up there, but it's not maybe channeling through in a very definite way, you know, the rage.
All right. So Elizabeth, I mean, Carlene makes a good point. You know, there are women out there who are certainly expressing themselves in music and maybe not with, you know, the amps turned up to 11, you know, a la Spinal Tap. So what did the Riot Girl movement, G-R-R-R-L, I think I may have put one R too many in there, but, you know, that came out of the Pacific Northwest in 93. What was so specific and special about that?
Well, there was a sense of, well, first of all, it really felt at the time that they were bringing a very openly feminist discourse to the stage, and I really cannot remember when it was done so openly, except in the women's music subgenre, which is a lot
folkier. That's a different thing, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So they were bringing that. And what's interesting to me is that Riot Girl came from both the Northwest, but also Washington, D.C. It was really bicoastal movement. And from that, they got this really this taste for diatribes, for political grandstanding, which I personally love because I love people who say really insane things and make huge overstatements. And I really kind of miss this kind of outsize sense of mission now.
Let's hear a little bit from the band Bikini Kill and their song Rebel Girl. So that's one of the Riot Girl bands, Bikini Kill, and the song Rebel Girl. And we're asking, where are the women who rock hard these days? They're not as much in evidence as they were 15 years ago when Bikini Kill and PJ Harvey and Liz Phair and so many others were on the scene. We're speaking with Elizabeth Vincentelli from Time Out New York and with Carlene Bauer from Elle Magazine. Now, Carlene, you mentioned Beth Ditto.
Yes.
from The Gossip.
Yes.
Does she also have that kind of... It isn't just about, as you said, the volume. Elizabeth's talking about the message, you know, that kind of in-your-face, that manifesto, that kind of spit-in-your-eye kind of... does she have that?
I would say. I mean, the lyrics, as far as I understand them, aren't... They're sort of bluesy sort of love songs. They're sort of built on that template. They're more about love, as I understand them, and they're not sort of a political statement about being feminist, not so much. But I do think that she... I think she came out of Olympia via Arkansas, so that Olympia was a Riot Girl hop, and so she does have a sort of maybe geographic connection, too, to that time and place.
Let's hear a little bit from The Gossip featuring Beth Ditto. And live at Liverpool, this song was written in response to an anti-gay marriage stance by President Bush. That's The Gossip, featuring vocals by Beth Ditto, live at Liverpool, Standing in the Way of Control, another political manifesto, sort of in keeping with the spirit of 1993 and the Riot Girl movement. But Beth Ditto and The Gossip, Carlene, they sell way more records and put way more fannies in the seats on the other side of the Atlantic than they do here.
I think I would have—this is a personal, this is sort of unscientific observation, but I do think over the years the British have been much more responsive to female musicians, female anything, actually, sort of a female voice. And I know that sort of what it seems like the Riot Girl sort of followed in the 80s and sort of late 70s. There were a lot of post-punk bands that involved women like X-Ray Specs or The Slits. So I think that for whatever reason, there's been a sort of tradition, even women writers, you know, sort of there's a stronger tradition over there of that than there is maybe here.
All right. Let's offer our Soundcheck listeners the opportunity to leave a comment on the Soundcheck page of our website at WNYC.org. You can check out my blog, and there are a number of comments coming in, including one from Memorex in Brooklyn, who writes, "I know plenty of girls rocking out. Most of them don't have record contracts. The execs seem to be focusing on the chicks who do red carpet and wear those silly Zac Posen dresses."
Okay, John, can I talk about this for a second?
Yeah.
why do they need a record contract? Why can't they start it themselves? I do not understand why in this day and age we have to hear these kind of excuses again. I don't see this like stopping guys. I'm sorry, but girls, like, you know what? You don't need a record contract to put on a web, you know, a MySpace page. I do not understand this kind of excuse at this point.
Well, you know, and the other thing is we're talking about bands like Bikini Kill and Sleater-Kinney as if they were household names, even at the height of their acclaim.
Right.
They were really, I mean, they were like, you know, indie buzz bands before the internet. And what did that mean before the internet?
Rolling Stone would never put Sleater-Kinney on the cover. I remember when they ran the review of The Woods, I think it wasn't the lead review, but it was sort of just one of the many reviews. And I thought, this is still happening? What would you lose? Like, what would it matter if you put a band on the cover and for a week your sales dip down? You know what? So
what about, what was in the air aside from music in the early 90s when these bands were getting started, when there was a kind of real scene happening? I mean, let's talk about feminism and rock in the early 90s.
Well, there's two things. I think, first of all, I think, I'm not saying, for instance, speaking just for myself, that a loud woman necessarily has to have the openly feminist message. I think it's a mistake to think that women are angry only about feminist issue. They can be angry about capitalism or society or the war in Iraq just as much as men can be. So, and that's not a feminist issue. That's just a humankind American society issue. So that's one thing. The other one is in terms of the early 90s, like ground, I would say. There was really a kind of, that feeling was in the air. I think it built up on years of punk and hardcore and grunge. They were very community-minded movements in terms of building networks based on independent labels. And these meanings have very different, I mean, these words have very different meanings now. But at the time, I think there was just really this feeling of an us against them, the us against the establishment that was major labels and the music industry.
Or even feminism as it had come down from the 60s.
Right.
And so where has that, I mean, look, we're having this conversation in a year when one of the leading contenders for the presidency of the United States is a woman.
I think that people really are still scared of feminism. I think even young women, or, you know, I remember, you know, when I was sort of in high school thinking, oh, I don't want to be a feminist, even though I knew that I was. And I think that feeling is still pervasive, sadly. I think young women still are sort of resistant to buck the norm.
And what's interesting, there's a lot of women, I think, are being very creative in the pop realm. There's people like Robin or Annie or even Missy Elliott, people like that. But they tend to work, not in rock. They're very creative and very out there in pop.
I think the problem is that the guitar, I think, was sort of the primary currency for, like, so how are you going to symbolically wrest control? You're going to play a guitar. And that was how everyone could see, like, you were really changing the terms. But now, rock is not, I mean, everybody talks about this, but rock is not the idiom. It's hip-hop, it's dance music, and this is what, I don't want to say the kids, but the kid, that's what they listen to, or younger people listen to. And I think that might be part of why these things are missing, is that the guitar isn't maybe, or Elizabeth, do you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that could be one thing. I think another interesting, there's a lot more women now working as songwriters and producers for hire, completely behind the scene, like Linda Perry, for instance. There's many others, Cara DiGiordi, I'm not sure to pronounce her name correctly. And that is a very interesting development to me, actually, this kind of behind-the-scene power.
I was thinking about this, and it seems that it's not that we're returning to models, but those were sort of the models of the 60s. You had Carole King writing the songs and later coming out to play her own songs on piano. You had girls out front with musicians behind, and it seems like that's maybe a little bit of what's happening, too.
I want to follow up on the whole idea of, you know, the guitar and rock perhaps not being the idiom. Maybe that's what's behind this, but let's take a quick break. And we'll continue our conversation. We'll hear where the next generation of female rockers may be. And then coming up in a little while, live music in our studio by the Polish jazz pianist Marcin Wasilewski. Stay with us. This is Soundcheck.
Attention that it brings. Tell me no, I say yes. I was
Santa Gold may be the creator and the singer, but does she rock? This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and we're back with Elle music critic Carlene Bauer and Time Out arts and entertainment editor Elizabeth Vincentelli. We're talking about the state of women in rock, and we want to hear from you. Do you think women are rocking the scene like they did back in the 90s? Call us at 212-264-7483 or leave a comment on the Soundcheck page of our website, wnyc.org. And while you're there, you can check out my thoughts in our daily blog. And I guess we're asking what it means to rock in 2008. Carlene had mentioned before the break that maybe it's just that the guitar and rock has the idiom has changed, and it's a different thing. We're going to start on the phone in this part of our conversation with WNYC's own drummer for hire, Karen Havlick. Karen, you've been listening, and is rock just a guy thing now?
I can't dismiss it as just a guy thing. Unfortunately, it's more that even though it's some 30 years later after women were first still being noticed for their novelty in bands and as instrumentalists, not merely front people, I think that just that it's still, we're not over the hump of being a novelty when we pick up a guitar or a bass or sit behind a drum kit.
Well, now, Karen, I happen to know that you play drums for many bands, one of them being a Slayer cover band. Is that not a novelty? I mean, a bunch of girls doing tunes by Slayer?
Yes, but the thing is, underlying this whole experience is that we're only getting the attention because we're playing guys' music.
Yeah. All right, now, one of the other things that you've done is you've helped put together the New York chapter of Rock Camp for Girls. What's the idea there?
The idea here is that if we give the girls the tools, we give them the confidence, we tell them that they do indeed rock for even picking up these traditionally guys' instruments, and then we give them some basic skills and tools, but try to make sure that they know that, okay, there are these rules. Now go and break them. And I think that, in many instances, is what rocks. And just to also be clear, I'm merely one of so many who have helped found the camp, and I couldn't express my gratitude to the rest of everybody, our executive board at Willie Mae Rock Camp for Girls.
Which actually began out in the Pacific Northwest, where...
Yes, our mother chapter, the Portland Rock Camp for Girls, is the model for our existence.
All right, now Carlene, you were telling me before, you were about to mention the rock camp during the break.
I think Elizabeth and I were sort of talking about, you know, the existence of their rock camps, and I wondered, I thought, well, these things have been in existence for a while, and I thought, when are we going to see the fruits of, not that I feel any pressure to sort of, but I'm interested to see what will come of this sort of concerted effort to encourage young women to start their own bands, make their own music, maybe start their own labels, things like that.
I think it's just right now, and that they're not getting the attention that they deserve, or they're possibly on that cusp of tweendom, mm-hmm. where we don't want to have any more Miley Cyrus incidents, that possibly parents are being smarter about managing their very young talent, but they are out there. There are two just in Brooklyn. Shout out to Magnolia and shout out to Care Bears on Fire. They are, you know, 12 years old and, you know, 11 and 13 and picking up the instruments and rocking with that abandon that Elizabeth was talking about.
Well, here's a comment, and there are many of them coming in, as you might imagine, on the Soundcheck page of our website, wnyc.org. E. May in Brooklyn writes, "The girls aren't waiting for a record contract." This goes back to, Elizabeth, what you were saying before in response to an earlier comment that why should we have to wait for record contracts? "Look at all of the amazing volunteers at Willie Mae Rock Camp for Girls in Brooklyn, the Portland Girls Rock Camp, the Southern Girls Rock and Roll Camp in Tennessee." So it's happening, and it's happening, but I guess, Carlene, it goes back to your question. Where are the results? When do we see that?
Well, I'm just thinking that there may be a resistance to maybe on the consumer end, maybe now for whatever reason, to sort of be interested in hearing women write their own songs and play their own instruments.
Elizabeth, can I ask you to weigh in on the question? Is the rock idiom just the wrong idiom for young women these days?
That's a thorny question. I think it's one idiom, and I really think we should cover the entire spectrum of idioms that are available to us, from electro to house to techno to rock, and rock is one of them. So I'm a little baffled by that lack of interest in that medium, which I really do think is one of the most potent live. And to me, it really comes back to that. I mean, I was at a hardcore show this past Wednesday, and the energy on stage was absolutely phenomenal. But the crowd, I would say, was 80% male, and in the pit, certainly like 99.9% male. There was a lot of, you know, guys pawing each other, and you know, in the name of slam dancing. And I really wonder why. It's more like a question for me. It's like, why aren't women really adopting this kind of really brutal? I mean, and the weird thing is, like, I could not be like more mellow in real life, or you know,
hence the need. I feel like that might, yeah,
there is that need, you know, like that's why I actually also I love metal. I love listening to metal, and I love going to metal shows. There's a kind of release in that type of music that I think makes people feel great.
And do you also like being seen in places like that? Is there a statement being made that, you know, this is not just for you guys, that I belong here too?
I don't know. I don't really think of it that way, actually. It's an interesting question. I don't know. I just go. And then, I mean, sometimes it can be a little rough because I don't go into the pit. It's, you know, I'm 42. I'm not, my bones don't mend as fast anymore.
All right, let's take some calls. Our number is 212-264-7483. 212-264-7483. Where are the women in rock? Sina is with us here in New York. Hi, Sina.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay.
I'm just calling to say I think if you're having a discussion on women in rock, you should definitely mention Patti Smith, who I think, you know, spans all genres. She does art, music, poetry, politics, and she's still rocking her brains out at age 61. And I'm sure you've seen her, but if you haven't, you know, if you go to one of her shows, you're going to see rock.
Right.
So I think you got to give her props.
Absolutely. And you know who else I would mention? Toshi Regan, you know, although she sits out on stage often with just an acoustic guitar,
right,
there is no other verb to describe her other than she rocks. I mean,
exactly.
The woman is a force of nature. So it isn't all about volume, but certainly Patti Smith, a great example. Sina, thanks very much for the call.
You're welcome.
Here's a comment from Erin, who writes, "This conversation was stale a decade ago. The discussion need go no further than to examine why fewer women get coverage in rock music. Appearance. If Beth Ditto weighed 130 pounds, the gossip would sell out stadiums. Women in rock are judged by their appearance far more than their male counterparts."
I don't know that that's true. I know that Kim Deal, who does not look conventionally beautiful, although I would sort of disagree, like they've sold out two shows in New York. So this is
for the Breeders.
Yes, for the Breeders, for their new album.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but that's not a stadium, and I mean, I suppose
I see. Well,
I suppose the point. I mean, as much as we don't want to say that this is what drives it, I mean, you know.
I think it's a good point, actually.
Yeah.
I think it's in fact, I remember when the gossip started, this started at about the same time as Yeah, Yeah, Yeah started, and they have an identical lineup, which is a singer, guitar, and drums. And I remember at the time, which was like 6 or 7 years ago, I remember saying to a colleague, if Beth Ditto looked like Karen O, that band would be huge. And they really did come out at the same time with, again, a very similar sound. But again, Yeah Yeahs are gone now. Like, what are they doing? And, you know, who's having the last laugh? So that's pretty encouraging.
All right, we're speaking with Elizabeth Vincentelli from Time Out New York and with Carlene Bauer from Elle Magazine. Where are women in rock these days? PA joins us from Lumberville, Pennsylvania. Hi, PA.
Hey, how are you, man?
All right.
I'm a huge fan of Joan Jett, not only because of what she was doing 20 years ago, but she has also made a very sexually political statement about her lifestyle and who she is now. And she put out an amazing album a little over a year ago called Sinner. It was political, it was sexual, and the music was amazing. And she, even on this program, she is just not getting the support that she deserves. She's an amazing artist. She's as current as anything out there. She's writing intelligently. And nobody talks about her.
And although we haven't mentioned her, we have actually heard some of her work already on the program, because didn't she produced that Bikini Kill?
She produced Riot Girl, yes.
Rebel Girl.
Right. Yeah, she's working with a couple of bands, but her own music is just ridiculously fresh. And I was screaming at so many, you know, all the college stations, play Joan's stuff. Just because she's in her 40s and 50s doesn't mean she isn't current. Let her play. There was a really great political song against George Bush, and then three or four cuts later, it's I Don't Care If Everyone Knows, which was about androgyny and the fact that she was in a sexual relationship and getting married with another woman. And I mean, it's just wonderful, wonderful stuff. And nobody gives her the time of the day.
All right, so Joan Jett, certainly along the lines of Patti Smith. I mean, it's interesting. We have a couple of callers who, you know, in an attempt to show where women in rock are today, are having to cast back to people who were on the scene in the 70s and the 80s. I mean, that's kind of striking to me. You look at women on the charts today, and this album Rock Ferry, you know, the debut record by this blue-eyed soul singer from England called Duffy, number one on the iTunes charts. Carlene, why is this sound so hot now?
Well, I would say that I think maybe Amy Winehouse kicked it all off with a sort of revisionist soul sound, and I think that Duffy, you know, was sort of going in that route too, and maybe people have become acclimated to it, and they're sort of, and I think actually, as old-fashioned as this may, like, that's the sounds, the melodies, the arrangements, the delivery, the sentiments, like, people still respond to that stuff. And I think the way it's being put over in her music is maybe what people are missing from pop in general. And so they're making that number one, you know, they're voting with their, you know, in that way.
Right. Well, here is a little bit from the album that currently sits atop the iTunes charts by Duffy. That is Duffy and the title track from her hit new record, Rock Ferry. And that, as I mentioned, is the number one album on the iTunes charts right now. There is Carlene, the sort of retro soul thing, but to me, she sounds more in the vein of a Dusty Springfield.
Which she made the album Dusty in Memphis is a soul record, so it's, you know, sort of...
Yeah, I think that album was originally titled... Light Rock Ferry, but they had to change the title. Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. Now, here's a comment from Brennan here in Manhattan who writes, yes, of course women rock is hard, but there seems to be a third wave feminism now, perhaps post-gender, more mixed groups. Yeah, yeah, yes. Be your own pet. Block Party, are they a mixed group? Perhaps the late 80s, early 90s gave way to more gender-integrated bands that we're seeing today. Elizabeth, you think
that's true too? Yes, absolutely, and that's great actually. There's a lot of I think mixed bands are very satisfying to see.
And wouldn't that be what we're aiming at anyway? Is where it no longer matters what the gender of the people on the stage is?
Well, but very often, I think it kind of to me it still misses a little something. I'm not seeing anybody, I don't know. There's something very male in U2, for instance. There will be a very different band if they had a woman in there. And they're fine as, I loathe them, but they're fine as they are. So that's why I think, you know, yeah, we can have our U2, and why can't we have like our girl U2?
It makes me sort of nostalgic idea, for the Bengals. Wow. Like I was thinking, like that.
Bengals. Wow. All right.
Just to think that there was a time where you would have four or five of them in the band,
right.
As women. You know.
Well,
so
look, all these kids, all these girls going to the rock camps for girls around the country are 12 and 13 now. 5 years from now, who knows what we'll be seeing and hearing. We've been speaking with Carlene Bauer, music critic of Elle magazine, and Elizabeth Vincentelli, the arts and entertainment editor of Time Out New York, about the state of women in rock, and certainly in the background, Cat Power, a major figure, however much it's rock or not is open to debate. But Carlene, Elizabeth, thank you both for being
thank
with us on
much.
The show today.
Thank you.
And coming up next, a much buzzed about Polish jazz pianist, Marcin Wasilewski, performs live in our studio. You won't want to miss that just ahead. Tomorrow, a major British radio station insists that film scores belong alongside the great classical repertoire. But are they cheating their listeners? We'll debate the topic in our next Soundcheck Smackdown tomorrow.